Welcome to Side Podcast episode 59. Every time he pushed the brake pedal, he disappeared. Coming up on today's show, Ron Dennis's Bahrain speech, Ferrari's new nose, plus our review of qualifying and the race. Hi, welcome. Mega show. Got to get on.
Whoa. Slow it down a little bit.
No, that's it. That's the intro.
Why?
We've got too much to talk about.
Okay. Go on then.
Good week, bad week.
It's been a good week for Grand Prix ticket sales, as Silverstone have said they're building an extra grandstand to house the increased demand, and the Valencian GP basically sold out on the first day the tickets were available.
We haven't bought a single ticket to a single Grand Prix, and we still don't know which one we're going to go to.
You know that the season will be over before we've decided.
Still be thinking about it.
Yeah. It's been a bad week for Lewis Hamilton because he was fined, finally, after his speeding ticket business in France last year, and he didn't have to show up in court.
It's a good week to bury bad news.
It's a good week for Toro Rosso as their new 2008 car debuted out on track in Italy. As everyone else was either in Malaysia or travelling to Bahrain, it fell to Red Bull junior driver Brendan Hartley to shake down the car. Its first official test will be this month in Barcelona.
Ferrari were also there, weren't they? And they were allegedly testing their new nose, which we're going to talk about in a little while.
Yeah.
The thing that really interests me is if it was a secret test, how come Ferrari were there as well?
And they were both at the same test.
Yeah, were they testing out some of these issues with the Ferrari engine? Because we haven't had any blow-ups this week.
Interesting.
Yeah.
It's been a bad week for Vettel because he's admitted that Red Bull blocked his move to McLaren over the winter.
That's not a bad week. That was ages ago.
Well, yeah, but it's only just come out now.
I see. He's just decided to admit it.
Yeah.
News and views.
There's an annual motorsport business forum in Monaco, isn't there?
There is. It's been going on for years.
Well, it's expanding because one took place in Bahrain this week. Ron Dennis gave the keynote speech and it was quite a good speech.
I'm not a big fan of Ron, but I thought it was a good speech too.
There were two main points that I thought were interesting. The first one was he says he doesn't mind the global expansion of the sport as long as it doesn't go past 20 races per season. Don't call him lazy though. It's not because he doesn't want to turn up to races, but he likes the off season.
So he does like his holiday.
That's not why. He said the closed season is essential not only for logistical reasons, but in order to stir up a sense of anticipation in the hearts and minds of Formula One fans. The best-selling editions of Formula One magazines are always the preview editions, not the editions published during the season.
Hadn't thought about it like that. That's a very good point.
The numbers for our show go up not for the preview episodes, but for the first few races of the season.
Interest certainly peaks before the first Grand Prix, doesn't it?
Yeah, so he's definitely right.
He's onto something there.
The other point I liked was he said he was all for cost-saving rules, but there needs to be stability. In his speech, he said every time the rules are changed, the result is almost always a cost increase because the smaller teams are perhaps less able to meet those cost increases. They may not respond as effectively to a rule change as their more affluent competitors.
This ties in with something that Ian Phillips was saying on Radio 5 Live during free practice on Friday.
Ian Phillips from Force India.
Yeah, he's Director of Business Affairs or something at the team. He had some really good insights to make. First thing he pointed out was that when the team was Spyker, a working group was put together to decide the rules for 2009, and Spyker couldn't afford to contribute to that fund. Therefore, although they know what the rules are for 2009, they have no idea how the working group came to those conclusions. Therefore, they're already on the back foot for next year.
Couldn't they just ask?
They didn't put any money towards it, and all the other teams did, so no one's going to tell them.
Aww.
So that's not really fair, is it? The other thing he said, which was also quite interesting, is this new four-race gearbox is basically killing the team. It's costing them a fortune.
Why?
Because in the past, when something went wrong with the gearbox, they replaced that part. Now, anytime anything goes wrong with any other part of the car, if the car doesn't finish the race, they replace the whole gearbox. They're ending up with loads and loads and loads of spare parts that never, ever get used to anything like their duty cycle. It's costing them millions.
It seems like the kind of rule that's only going to help the rich teams.
It's going to help the reliable teams, yeah, because they're going to replace the parts less and it's going to cost them less money. The smaller teams, they're going to suffer.
There were rumours back at the beginning of February that Ferrari were trying out a radical nose cone, the premise being a slot cut between the front wing and the front wheels on the nose. The slot would allow air to flow underneath the nose, through the nose, and over the top of the cockpit. It's been quiet since then until this week, where Ferrari were at the same test as Toro Rosso, and apparently they tried it out, but it didn't do what they wanted it to do.
The plan was always to bring it and debut it at the Bahrain Grand Prix, and it isn't here, so I guess they had some problems. There were rumours this week that the hole would be cut somewhere around the B, you know, the logo, the Bridgestone logo at the front of the nose?
Mm-hmm.
But I think it's going to be farther back, somewhere near the Shell logo.
Surely they've got to be careful not to cut out any sponsor logos.
You say that, but it didn't stop them when they covered the BBS logo up on the wheels. They just painted a sticker over their hubcaps.
True.
The idea of this slot is the air coming off the trailing edge of the front wing gets compressed under the nose, and it should release some of the pressure and allow it to go up and over the cockpit, if that makes any sense. It's hard to describe on an audio podcast.
Yeah. Didn't someone try this out before?
According to Autosport, Stewart looked into it in 1990. So it's not a new idea, but no one's ever made it work before.
And Ferrari haven't either.
As yet.
So at the moment, we don't know if they're going to bring it out in Spain.
No, nothing more. I presume at some point they're going to have to pass another crash test if they're going to cut a great big hole in their front wing, but who knows?
We did notice during free practice that Ferrari's side pod mounted winglets were flexing considerably. That must be illegal.
It's been ages since we've had a flexible wing row, isn't it? It's almost a year.
But also, McLaren's front nose bridge wing thing.
Yes.
That was also flexing more than it has done previously.
Absolutely. That was wobbling all over the place. But Ron would call it feathering. Remember, it's not flexing.
Oh, yeah.
So I presume that the Ferrari side pod winglets things, they were feathering too. But they were feathering a lot. It almost looked like they were made of cardboard, in fact.
It is about this time that you usually get a flexible wing problem because they are pushing the rules as far as they can go. And then they get told not to. We mentioned in the pre-season build-up that McLaren were potentially going to be moved to the fifth position in the pit lane, and they were for Australia and Malaysia. However, now in Bahrain, they have been dropped right to the end, which is where they should be.
It's all a bit controversial, this, isn't it?
No one really seems to be coming out with any specific reason why.
Nope.
But Ed Gorman is the only person who has got a story.
He did look into it for us, didn't he? Well, I say for us, obviously. He looked into it for his blog readers. We just stole it.
Yeah, he said that Bernie is the one that decides the pit lane order, and he has done for 30 years or so. Ron Dennis just asked him where they were going to be, no pressure or anything, just asking. And Bernie said they'd squeeze him in fifth or somewhere because of the massive motorhome.
Yeah, it's not going to fit down the lower end of the pits in most races.
But then Max sent a letter saying, Bernie, I have had a lot of complaints from people saying that you arbitrarily put Ron there, which is something you've never done before. Suddenly, out of the blue, you do this, and the teams are complaining. So I think you ought to do what you've been doing for 30 years and put them where they should be, which is at the end of the pit lane.
Boo, he's a spoiler sport, that Max, isn't he?
Ed then went and asked McLaren what they thought, and they said a team or teams did complain, but only after they were asked to. What does that mean?
Presumably the teams above McLaren have no reason to complain, so it must be someone beneath them. Toro Rosso and Force India both use Ferrari engines, so maybe they were lent on by the engine partners to raise a complaint.
My money's on Red Bull.
Why is your money on Red Bull?
Always has been. I don't understand why they would let them just waltz in and take their garage.
Well, you see, Red Bull do have a massive motorhome too, don't they?
They do.
And they don't want it to be swamped by the McLaren gigantic thing. Have you seen, by the way, Red Bull's new website?
Yeah.
When it sweeps down the pit lane?
Yeah.
Do you notice that every single garage and every single team is there except for McLaren? That motorhome is missing.
Some of them are different colours.
Ferrari's is yellow, but it's there. And I think there's two Williams pit lanes for some reason. They must be the other McLaren one. So, you could be onto something there with that Red Bull idea.
So I guess it's more Max talk now.
It's the big story of the week.
I don't like
it. It's what people want to talk about.
Okay. Max wrote a letter to basically everybody.
This is following on from last week. So after the revelations that appeared last Sunday, he responded.
Yeah, he wrote a letter to everybody, and it was rubbish.
Yes, it was a lot of bunkum, wasn't it?
Well, he claimed that the video was the result of a covert operation, which is interesting but unproven. He said he's got plenty of support from other governing bodies, and he hasn't.
We haven't heard from them.
And he said he needs to repair the damage to his immediate family caused by the newspaper when, you know, he clearly wasn't thinking about them when he made the video.
And he lives in a flat in Monaco all by himself.
He really cares about his family.
They're not that immediate, are they?
In fact, the only bit of the letter that was relevant was that he was going to issue legal proceedings against the News of the World, which he then did. Following that, four teams, three clubs, the Bahraini Prince, and almost every single member of the press have turned against him.
You're going to get us into so much trouble for playing that.
The Bahraini Prince said, "With great regret, I feel that under the current circumstances, it would be inappropriate for you to be in Bahrain at this time." BMW and Mercedes issued a joint statement. "The content of the publications is disgraceful. As a company, we strongly distance ourselves from it." Toyota Motorsport, "When all the facts are known, it will be for the FIA to decide whether Mr. Mosley has met the moral obligations which come with the position of FIA president." ADAC, "We ask the president to very carefully reconsider his role within the organisation." KNAF, "We will go and will vote for him to resign." And AAA, "We have conveyed to Mr. Mosley that it would be in the best interest of all concerned if he were to step down."
It's becoming a bit of a landslide, isn't it?
Why only four teams, and why did BMW and Mercedes issue a joint statement?
Well, those two manufacturers are both German, and the other two teams are Japanese. I'm assuming that those countries are still very sensitive about history and about the war, and they don't appreciate Max carrying on the way that he is alleged to have carried on.
Well, he didn't help matters after that.
He didn't, did he?
His response. Given the history of BMW and Mercedes-Benz, particularly before and during the Second World War, I fully understand why they would wish to strongly distance themselves from what they rightly describe as the disgraceful content of these publications. That's just stirring things up.
For that statement, and that statement alone, Max should not hold the position that he does any longer. Although he may in the future manage to clear his name and exonerate himself from everything that the news of the world dragged up, he may be able to clear his name in court, and that's, you know, we cannot hold that against him if he does. He should not be dragging up the history of BMW and Mercedes-Benz just to take the heat off of himself.
It's kind of like, I'm going down, I'm taking you all with me.
Oh my goodness, he's not going down without a fight, is he? It's not going to be pretty these next couple of weeks.
When is he going to go then?
The way things are going, not soon, because he's fighting every step of the way. He's not giving up easily, and it looks like he's going to take down anyone he can. Anyone and everyone required to save his backside.
Oh my God, don't say that.
Oh no, well, that's a portrait of phrase. But that's why he's got to go. Because every time we say anything about him, every single word now is innuendo.
Yeah, I just think on a very simple level, if you forget all the politics, the fact is, just thinking about it makes me cringe.
Yes.
And I don't ever want to listen to anything he says ever again.
No.
Therefore, he must go.
The jokes will now never cease.
People were saying this week that Massa might keep the same engine as in Malaysia.
I think he is, isn't he?
Why would he do that?
When he has an option to change it, why would he want to keep it?
Yeah.
Well, I imagine it hadn't done much work when he spun out halfway through the race. And because Bahrain is very, very dusty, you don't want to carry a Bahrain engine anywhere else if you can help it. So if he can use his last engine again, then it means it can run in Bahrain and then get rid of it and have a clean one for Spain.
I think we mentioned last week that there could be a new qualifying rule. And this week there was.
And what is that rule?
Maximum lap time in the third session.
And what is the maximum lap time?
1:39.
Okay. So is that specific to this track?
Don't know.
It can't be the same for every track, can it?
I don't know.
It's a bit weird.
It is a bit weird. It's not very clear, per usual.
You'd have thought, that makes a change. You'd have thought they'd have specified a maximum percentage.
It didn't seem to be a problem this session, but I was wondering, if a driver spins round and like takes forever to finish his lap, does that mean he's out?
Well, it's not every single lap that this rule applies to, and I think that if he did spin on his in-lap, he'd be pretty stupid. So, yeah, it would suffer, and that's his own fault.
On F1.com, the official F1 website, they reported the story as it had a minimum lap time.
A bit of a typo on their part, then?
Well, that's quite a typo, because there's a big difference between a minimum lap time and a maximum lap time.
Maybe we don't understand the rule, maybe it's a different rule.
We're getting a bit worried about the marshals, aren't we?
No kidding.
Starting to see some problems.
Bit let down by them this week, actually.
When Lewis Hamilton crashed off, they weren't even looking.
Free practice too, this was, wasn't it, on Friday?
Yeah.
Lewis Hamilton came flying off the track, and as the camera panned round to follow him to the scene of the accident, five marshals, none of them paying attention.
They were just chatting.
Yes.
Having a cup of tea, chatting, you know.
The guy with the yellow flag was looking in the wrong direction, and although some of his friends managed to jump out of the way, he just got covered in a shower of dust as Hamilton smashed into the wall.
So he wasn't looking, clearly not doing his job properly. But if he got hurt, then they would blame Formula One, the cars.
It would be Formula One's fault if a marshal was hit by an oncoming car, and the result would be higher safety barriers and fans being moved farther away from the track.
All because they were chatting.
All because they weren't doing their job and they weren't paying attention. And they were caught on camera, we saw it.
And then in qualifying, when Sato span off,
yep.
The yellow flag, it was a bit over the top.
It was excessive, wasn't it? Because he was clear. The scene of the accident was completely free. Yeah, the guy with the yellow flag, he was just waving it vigorously.
But they did red flag the session, so maybe it was more dangerous than we thought.
I think they just wanted to get that yellow flag out of that guy's hand. Just get him off the track. Give it to somebody else. He's ruining everything.
I remember when that marshal threw his flag on the track, like was last year.
That the US Grand Prix?
I think so.
I think they're going to need to bring in the digi flags as soon as possible, aren't they? Not a moment too soon.
Lots of the drivers are starting to say how they've lost weight over the winter.
Right.
Kubica lost lots of weight and Rosberg has lost some as well.
Okay.
But I don't think being small is such a good thing.
And why is that?
Well, when you look at Nakajima,
yeah.
There were some onboard shots of him in the car. And every time he pushed the brake pedal, he disappeared.
He sank without a trace, didn't he?
Couldn't see him.
I don't think he can see over that cockpit. I think he's lifting himself up in order to see the corners. And the second he hits the brake, he can't hold himself in that position and then sort of disappears behind the steering wheel.
It can't be safe.
It can be good, can it? It was a great onboard shot, quite funny, but yeah, not ideal.
He needs a cushion under his seat or something to lift him up a bit.
He needs a booster seat. Talking of little guys, Takumi Sato.
Yeah, he spun off.
Is there any point in Super Aguri turning up anymore?
Well, I don't think so, because mostly they just sit in the garage. They're too scared to go out in case they crash because they haven't got any parts.
Are they adding anything to the show?
Clearly not.
They're always last, they're always at the back, and they're always off the pace.
It's quite sad, really, because they were looking better last year.
Yeah, and they've just fallen right to the back now.
But maybe things will start looking up when some money starts coming in.
You think they're just playing for time at the moment?
Maybe. Also at the back of the grid, Force India.
Yeah, didn't make it into Q2 this week.
They wanted to, they desperately wanted to, but they couldn't quite make it.
They didn't make it into Q2 last race, and they didn't make it into Q2 the first race of the season. That was their goal before the season started, wasn't it?
Fisichella was saying he was really upset because it's so close.
Right.
It was like a few tenths of a second. And then, obviously, in a very PR way, he twists it into like, if it's that close, we'll do better in the race.
Yeah.
Yeah, right.
It clearly seems important to them, and it's a milestone they haven't managed to achieve yet, so they're going to have to keep pushing.
I think in the qualifying results, there were two surprises.
Okay, what were they?
Vettel.
Was right at the back.
Really poor compared to Bourdais. I mean, obviously, I like Bourdais, but that wasn't good.
No, he wasn't good the entire free practice. 1, 2, or 3. He's been nowhere. He's struggling, and it showed in qualifying.
Along with a lot of other people, I think he's blaming the tyres, but
it's worse for him than it is for anybody else, including his teammate.
It could be because Bourdais is so much better.
Yeah, I don't think that's the whole story. I believe he had the similar problem in Malaysia, and it's just a hangover from that. He hasn't managed to solve it yet, and they've got to keep working on it.
It is conceivable that Bourdais is faster than him, though.
Oh,
I mean,
shush.
I know, no, because Vettel is like the superstar.
Yeah.
But Bourdais has a lot more experience.
He does have experience setting up cars. Yes, that's true. Then why doesn't Vettel take Bourdais' setup then? Just copy everything he's got and then drive with that?
Okay, I don't have argument for that. You win. And the other surprise in the bottom six was Coulthard.
Not good.
No, bit of a poor showing.
Well behind his teammate Webber.
He said that he had serious oversteer problems.
Basically, it sounded like driver error from what he described.
Oversteer isn't driver error.
He said he was messing with the brake bias to try and fix the problem, and I don't think he got to the point where he wanted to get to. But Mark Webber showed him up. That's all there is to it.
If you've been on the live comment thread on sidepodcast.com.
And if not, why not?
You may have noticed Scott Woodwiss commenting, and he's also sent us some voicemails.
Hell of a lot of voicemails, actually. One of them was 8 minutes long.
Yeah, 8 minutes. It was wonderful, but quite long.
Very impressive, but you're going to have to shorten it a little bit, aren't you?
I like to call it edited highlights.
Let's hear some of them.
Hi there, it's Scott Woodwiss again. I've just been commenting on the free practice too. I have to say the live comments are very good, and I have to applaud you for that, because it really does make for some a good time watching either free practice or qualifying the race. I will be doing it for the qualifying the race, definitely. It sort of gives me a chance, you know, to talk to other F1 fans such as myself. I mean, some of my friends are not really F1 fans. So it's nice to talk to people who enjoy the same sort of stuff. Anyway, I've got some my own views on some of the things which happened in free practice too. First of all, I'd like to point out the live feed problems. It did seem that at one point it froze up quite a bit, and the coverage was like 9 minutes behind, and that's not exactly particularly good. And so I noticed someone commented, apparently Bernie's not favouring ITV anymore. I think he's probably right. I think he's probably favouring the BBC now. He's got the deal in place. And like I said on the comments, I know a lot of people will be tuning in to watch, but that's just a bit ridiculous having it freeze for that long and being that so far behind. It did catch up and it did sort of, you know, become smooth at the end, but it just, they need to work on that. I think it's just ridiculous, I think.
I actually gave up watching the ITV feed this week.
It was particularly bad, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Do we think that's because more people were watching because it was at a more sensible hour this week?
Yeah, maybe the internet was just more busy.
Yeah, they weren't prepared for it. They weren't accounting for it, and they couldn't cope, could they?
Scott then went on to run through some of the drivers, and he picked up on someone who was particularly struggling.
Alonso. He was, I noticed in the beginning of the session, his car was very oversteery, and thought, well, okay, he's obviously, he's a double world champion, but the way he's driving it, you wouldn't have really thought it. He did seem to improve. I mean, he was 18th, and then he managed to go up to 12th. But, you know, I mean, I know that car's not exactly up to scratch. It's not a very good car at the moment. And obviously, Fernando's made that clear. Renault needs to go and sit down and try and work out some problems with it, maybe for Barcelona. Because, of course, they're having a big error update for most of the teams in Barcelona. So that should be interesting to see how sort of effect that does.
I think that's a bit harsh. I mean, there's a really bad car.
It is a bit hopeless. And I notice in Autosport this week, Renault are advertising for 3 new aero guys.
3?
Unusual. Yeah, all in 1 week. It looks like they're really struggling in that department and they're trying their best to catch up.
Next up, Scott talks about my favourite Bordet.
I thought your favourite was Button.
Oh, yeah. My other favourite.
Bordet.
Yeah.
He managed to end up 9th, but I think the progress which he showed is absolutely brilliant. 9th place in free practice, and I reckon that if he carries on the way he's going and the progress he's done with qualifying, because like some people said, that's probably just him on light fuel and trying to practice on his qualifying laps, which he's already mentioned where he's down for. I reckon that you'd be pretty wise probably putting your money on Bordet being in Q3. I mean, I'd love to see it, because I mean, he's one of the drivers which I'm supporting this year. So, but yeah, Bordet is one of the good guys for me, and I really would like to see him get up there and be good.
Me too.
Ah, goodness gracious me, not another one.
So that voicemail was left after free practice, and then he left us another voicemail after qualifying with his thoughts and his predictions for the race.
Let's hear it now.
Hi, it's Scott again. I'd just like to give my thoughts on qualifying. First of all, I'd just like to say congratulations to Robert Kubica getting his first pole position. That's thoroughly deserved. I'm so happy for him. Another driver to point out is Jenson Button. I think he did a fantastic job to get through to Q3 and even getting ahead of Alonso. Speaking of Alonso, I think he was very lucky, very, very lucky to get through into Q3. And whether he's going to stay in the top 10 will be interesting. He might move up and grab a point, but that'll be interesting. Lastly, I'll just do my race predictions for the race. And I think it's going to be very close between Kubica and the Ferraris, because they both look very quick. And I'm going to put my neck out and say I think Massa will get the goods and get the win tomorrow. And then it'll be Raikkonen second and Kubica third. Thanks very much.
Good predictions. Are we going to make ours now?
Not yet, actually, because we have one more voicemail from Jordan.
All right. And what's he got to say for himself?
Hello, I'm Jordan Lohman, phoning here from Camrose, British Columbia, Canada. I'm just letting you know that you're doing a great job with the podcast, and I'm very happy for Robert Kubica getting the pole for the first time in the BMW. I think that that this year it will be more sided instead of just Ferrari and McLaren winning races, but I think we could see BMW, if they can pull off a win, he may be here in Bahrain, keep it consistent, and hopefully they can win some more races. My predictions for the Bahrain Grand Prix, I think it's going to be Kimi Raikkonen finish first. I think it's going to be Massa second, and I think it's going to be Hamilton third. So, thanks.
Answer the phone.
It's for you.
He did call back and apologise for the phone interruption, and he also said that he will be watching Renault carefully as well to see how Alonso and Piquet can improve the car.
So, what were his predictions? I didn't quite catch it over the telephone.
It was Raikkonen for the win, then Massa, then Hamilton.
So no Kubica?
No. Are you thinking Kubica will be up there then?
Well, I was mighty impressed with his run. He said he had flat-spotted tyres in the last couple of corners. That's quite an impressive achievement.
Do we think that he might be really light, though?
Almost certainly, yeah. Nick Heidfeld seems to be quite heavy. He seems to be quite light.
BMW did say they weren't expecting pole position, but, you know, everyone tends to say that.
I think they were. I think they were definitely aiming for it. I think they were aiming for it in Australia, but they failed. And I think they were aiming for it again, and this time they managed it.
So where does Kubica feature in your top 3?
I've got him as 3rd. I think he's going to have a bit of a tangle with Massa at the first corner. It's the first time he's been on the front row. He's got to lead the field. He's got to lead the pack. It's a bit of additional pressure. It might get to him.
I disagree. I've got Kubica for the win.
Really?
You know how last year Massa got pole position, fastest lap and the win?
Yes.
I think Kubica could do that this year.
Well, Nick got fastest lap in the last race, but I don't see them winning it. I really don't. I'm not that optimistic. It was a great run, but I don't think he's going to win it.
Well, I think Kubica is going to win it, followed by Hamilton and then Massa.
I have Hamilton for the win.
Really?
I think they're all going to get tangled up at the start and he'll just slide his way through without any bother. And then from then on, he'll control the race. Second, I have Raikkonen. I think he's heavy and I think he'll come back stronger towards the end.
Well, we'll see who's right after this short break. Come and join Side Podcast on Facebook. You can be my friend by looking up Christine Blashford, or you can join our group by searching for Side Podcast. Post photos, watch videos, take part in discussions, and share your links. It's all happening on Facebook, so visit us now. The race. So it's fair to say that my predictions were quite wrong.
Completely wrong, I would say.
Yeah, I had it a bit backwards.
You did a little bit. I wasn't so bad, though. What did you say?
I had Kubica, Hamilton, Massa.
Right.
So obviously Massa won. Hamilton wasn't there at all.
No.
You had Hamilton, Raikkonen, Kubica.
So completely wrong with Hamilton.
But 2 out of 3 right.
2 out of 3 ain't bad.
Before we get into the race, you know we were talking about McLaren being at the end of the pit lane.
Yes.
And we talked about Ed Gorman.
His piece, his investigative piece.
Yeah. Well, he has written a follow-up story. He said he put it to the FIA spokesman and they said they can confirm that there has been complaints.
Okay.
He decided to test the waters and conducted a survey.
Ad hoc.
To every team he asked, did you complain to the FIA about the McLaren garage allocation? Do you want to know the answers he got?
Yeah, okay. Then who did he ask first?
So he went to Force India.
Right.
They said no.
Ah.
He went to Super Aguri.
Uh-huh.
They said no.
Figures.
Honda.
Yep.
No.
Ah.
Toro Rosso.
Definitely said yes.
No.
No from Toro Rosso.
Toyota.
Mm-hmm.
They said no.
Right.
Red Bull.
That was a yes.
No.
No from Red Bull.
Williams.
No.
Renault. No.
No.
BMW.
No.
No.
Ferrari.
No.
So 10 no's.
10 no's.
So who complained?
No one has complained to the FIA, apparently.
Wow. No one's admitted it.
Mm.
He did say that he asked some high-level sources, so presumably, if they're on record as saying no, who did the complaining?
And on the ITV pre-race coverage, they were talking to Christian Horner, and he just confirmed that they don't care where McLaren are in the pit lane.
They're not in the slightest bit bothered.
So I was wrong.
He said our energy station makes a lot of noise, so McLaren might be bothered, but we don't give a damn.
Talking of ITV's pre-race coverage, Martin Brundle was talking about the higher cockpit temperatures. Do you remember we discussed that?
Post-Malaysian Grand Prix, Kubica complained that his cockpit was really, really hot, didn't he?
Well, Martin said it could be due to the higher cockpit sides.
Ah, because they're containing the heat?
I don't really know why exactly.
Are people putting things inside them? They're not hollow, are they? Are they stuffing electronic gadgets within the cockpit sides right next to the driver's head?
I don't know. It's probably just not letting the air circulate.
So there's just a massive heat build-up within there.
Hmm. Before the race even got going, Piquet lost second gear.
That's not a great start for the Renault Reliable Gearbox.
Didn't even make it to the line.
Good lord.
He spun later on and eventually retired, so we're assuming that's all part of the same problem.
Yeah, he spun in the same place that Hamilton spun in free practice too, didn't he? Although this time he didn't hit the barriers.
He wasn't the only one to have a bad start, though.
No. Nakajima, the anti-stall kicked in.
No.
Yeah, it did.
No. We're not talking about Nakajima.
Oh.
Lewis Hamilton.
Oh, yeah, he pressed the wrong button, didn't he? Bit of a wally.
Yeah.
Had a bad start. Bit of a rookie error. Mm-hmm. Why didn't he do that last year? Oh, he did. No, wait, he did.
You can't say that.
Not at the start, then. No. What happened then? Tell me what went wrong.
Well, he said, I messed up at the start as I didn't hit the switch early enough and therefore had not engaged the correct engine setting and the anti-stall kicked in.
So he has to hit a certain button within a certain time limit.
Well, do we think this has to do with that 90-second engine mapping freeze?
It could do. This is the one that says that you cannot change an engine map within 90 seconds of getting your car up to speed. Presumably, then, he left his car in the parade lap setting and didn't have time to change it?
Well, if he didn't hit the switch early enough, he would have been stuck in parade configuration for 90 seconds.
That's possible. That's very possible.
Someone who did get a good start
was Massa.
Yeah, he did really well to outdrag Kubica from the dark side.
From the dirty side.
From the dark side.
I know he's evil. It might have been from the dark side, but really it was the dirty side.
Yeah.
He got one car length ahead of him almost immediately.
Was Massa really quick or was Kubica just a bit slow?
Kubica was a bit slow off the mark. If Hamilton had got a good getaway, I think he'd have been swamped by him too.
The first lap was a bit mental.
Yeah, the first corner was pretty good actually. Very clean round the first corner, apart from a couple of people at the back, which we think was Suttel and Vettel getting together.
Yeah, I think that was the only incident in the first corner. And then around the next few, it was like 5 cars wide.
Between corners 3 and 4, that little straight there was a bit mental. It was the cars going left and right and all over the place. A bit crazy.
And then wasn't somebody putting oil all over the track?
Yeah, we don't know what happened there, although we have seen a picture of Vettel smoking. So maybe something happened in the accident, or maybe he was leaking oil somewhere. But it was in one or two places around the circuit and caused all sorts of problems.
He's not admitting it.
No, he spun on it as well later on. So, yeah, he's in denial there.
Also, at some point, both Button and Coulthard picked up punctures.
In, we think, separate incidents.
But we don't know what from.
No, could have been debris, or someone could have cut the tyre with a front wing against the back tyre or something.
Well, Kubica said that he hit debris at the first corner on his second lap.
We're not sure what that was.
I don't know what that was either.
That could have been something to do with the Force India collision. Maybe, maybe not.
So Vettel collided with Suttel, and then later on in the same lap, he hit someone else as well, didn't
he? I think he said someone else hit him.
Yeah.
He wasn't sure who it was, and that wrecked his race, and that ended it for him because it broke his rear suspension. It caused him to spin, and that was the end of his race.
He hasn't finished a race all year.
No, he hasn't. No, third retirement, not looking good for him. His season's going downhill.
Whilst all that was going on, Kovalainen managed to jump Kimi, and then Kimi got him back, and Kovalainen flat-spotted a tyre, meaning his first stint was rubbish.
It was a bit slow, and he got a little bit out of control. He got a bit excited. I liked that. It was a good couple of corners, lots of overtaking, and lots of action. However, Kovalainen did come out of it a little bit worse for wear.
Controversy of the race
was Hamilton and Alonso.
Yeah.
Hamilton was out of position because of his start line blunder and ended up behind his nemesis.
Hamilton was desperate to get past, obviously.
Yep.
And he bashed right into the back of Alonso.
Hell of an accident.
Right over the top of his wheel.
Yes. Smashed the rear wing of the Renault with his nose cone, lost the front of his nose, dropped the car down onto the tarmac very heavily, caused all sorts of damage to the underbody.
I just like that there was a big chunk taken out of Alonso's rear wing.
He had a little bite taken out of it, didn't
he? Someone got a bit peckish.
Yes.
ITV immediately jumped the gun and said that Alonso hadn't accelerated out of the corner.
Bad call. It didn't look to me like Alonso hadn't accelerated out of the corner, so I don't know what they were looking at. I think they were automatically blaming Alonso because they were so desperate for Hamilton to do well.
Ted even mentioned the words brake test.
Dangerous, dangerous game he's playing there.
Well, he was just saying that in the pit lane there was that word going around, so it wasn't him saying it.
I don't think the pictures really showed anything conclusive, although watching the replay, you did see Hamilton touch somebody else before he got near Alonso, so he was a bit of a pinball in the race anyway. He was bouncing off tyres left, right and centre.
Pat Simmons said, Fernando was coming out of the turn and accelerating down the straight. He reached fifth gear at 227 kilometres an hour on full throttle, no touching of the brakes or anything like that, and you can see on the accelerometer the impact. He got hit from behind.
I'm slightly annoyed about this because Renault do have on their website this year all of the details that they've had previously in terms of what the drivers are doing when they're accelerating, when they're braking, and you could have seen that. However, I can't use the website because the website is entirely useless, and therefore if their website was working well, we could have seen with our own eyes what had happened.
As it is, it appears to be Hamilton's second mistake in one race.
Yeah.
In like two laps.
I don't know what's happened to him. He didn't do well at the last race, and it's all fallen to pieces this one. He crashed in free practice too. It looked like he got it back together for qualifying. All gone wrong again when it really mattered.
In the press release, Ron said that they turned the engine down after that and just coasted through the rest of the race.
So to protect it for Spain.
Yeah. Now, it seems to me that with the rules the way they are, they may as well have just retired him and they could have got a fresh engine.
Only if the FIA deemed that it was worthy of such and they hadn't just retired him in order to get a new engine. That's the tricky bit that they've always got to balance.
I'm sure that they could fix that somehow.
Just sling it into the wall on the way around. Yeah, but then they've got to tell him to sling it into the wall, which he isn't going to do naturally. And if the engine's turned down, he can't throw it around as much as he normally would, and it's just never going to happen.
But it's definitely not a good state of affairs when the rules make me think, well, you might as well have just retired.
Absolutely, you might as well sling it off the road and get a fresh engine for the next race. Brilliant, brilliant rules.
A final point on this, on the comments, Nonsense said...
That's nonsense in uppercase, just for anybody who's not aware.
He said, in Barcelona, I hope Hamilton can make it to the track. He'll need bodyguards in Spain from now on.
So the Spanish aren't taking this one too well. I think I'd agree with them on that one, especially if they had ITV's coverage of the situation.
On a better subject, Bordet is really good.
I thought he started 15th and then he finished 15th.
Well, yeah, he did, but this time he got to see a checkered flag.
I did. First finish of the year, so better than Vettel in that respect.
Yeah, I mean, he got points in Australia, but he didn't actually finish.
No.
But he has now.
Good. Well, that's a start.
I noticed that Toro Rosso have matched Red Bull by bringing their mirrors inward.
Yes. Well, Red Bull Racing did that last race in order to help David see who's behind him, but it didn't make much difference at this race, did it?
Yeah, I thought it was really funny that they were cleaning the mirrors in the pit stop.
Yes.
Like he looks at them. Like he even knows where they are.
Like he's aware of them.
Poor Button.
Yeah, it was David's fault again, wasn't it?
Well, Button says it was David's fault and David says it was an incident.
Right. Yes, if I was Button, I think in that situation I'd have flung my car over the curbs, wouldn't you?
What about that sticky up thing?
You mean the bollard?
Yeah.
It's foam and it would have damaged his front wing, but it wouldn't have destroyed his car in the same way that Mountain David Coulthard did.
On the plus side, Coulthard's car didn't shatter into a million pieces.
It didn't, did it? It got hit at roughly the same angle as it did in Australia and it managed to hold together just about this time.
So is it about time that DC retired?
I think he should probably hang up his gloves and go fishing, don't you? Number of incidents in these first three races not looking good and not doing very well. Time to go home.
And another driver who maybe should have retired a while ago, Barrichello, he didn't get a drive-through penalty this race.
Oh, well, things are looking up for him then.
It's worth noting. Changing the subject, how do you rate Sutil's performance?
Badly, badly. Not good in qualifying. Fisichella wiped the floor with him today. Fisichella had a really, really good drive, didn't he?
I really liked it when he was holding up Hamilton because you just wouldn't think that.
No, he was mixing it well and he did a really good job of holding him back and I thought he had a good race. Sutil is probably going to be looking for a job very soon, don't we think?
I don't know. I kind of see him on the same level as Vettel. When they're good, they're really good, but he just seems to be struggling right now.
You can say he sucks. I don't mind. We can be honest.
I don't think that.
You don't think he sucks. No. Okay. You just think he's having a couple of off races and he'll come back strong in Spain.
Just having a lot of off races. Yeah.
Struggling. One thing I wanted to bring up actually was Nico Rosberg. Slightly technical, this one, but he had problems with his gear ratio selections. You know how they have to choose them on Friday after free practice 1 and 2?
Right.
And this week it was really, really windy.
Yep.
And teams weren't entirely sure which way to go with their gear ratio selections, but they had to commit on a Friday evening.
They went the wrong way.
Well, they had to take a bit of a gamble, depending on where they thought the wind might be during the race, whether it be a headwind or a crosswind or how it might affect their top speed. And I think they went the wrong direction. They took a bit of a risk. They went for maybe a moment of glory, and it turns out he didn't have the right gear selection when he needed it.
Didn't the wind keep changing direction, or it changed at least once?
Yeah, no, it did. It wasn't great, but I think on the main straight, he was hindered by not having a high enough top speed. Maybe he was expecting a wind to be pushing him along, and instead it was facing him, and it hindered his entire race, and he wasn't happy at the end of it.
Even though Kubica didn't manage to turn his pole position into a win, BMW are having a great weekend.
Yeah.
They've been on the podium for all 3 races so far this year.
Yep.
And they're leaving here leading the world championship.
Yeah, heading to Europe. Head of the pack. Are they your new favourites now?
Nope.
Oh. Oh, I thought you'd have switched by now.
No, I'm not that fickle.
Oh, you must find something to like within Heidfeld.
What, the Yeti?
With the beard?
I don't think so.
Kubica?
No. Oh, my God.
He's a bit tall. I didn't realise how tall he was till he stood on the podium.
Until he stood next to Massa.
Well, yeah, that's not a fair comparison. But he was on, what, the 3rd step? Yeah, he was taller than the guy on the top step.
Yeah.
Slightly weird.
It's interesting that there's 3 drivers all with the same amount of points.
It is, but didn't that happen this time last year?
Going into this race last year, there were 3 drivers at the top of the championship.
All with the same points.
Yeah.
Do you think we're in for the same again?
I do hope so.
Ooh, looking forward to it. It's about this time in the show, post-race, that we like to look into our Fantasy Races League, just to see how things are looking.
We like to.
I like to.
And how are things looking?
Well, for you, not very good.
Whatever.
What position are you in now?
111th.
And what position am I in?
45th.
Hooray! That's my kind of progress.
Actually, it's quite cool. You're 1 place behind Latitudinal Inertia.
That's not cool. It would be really cool if I was 1 place in front of Latitudinal Inertia.
It's nice that you're both together, though.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, great. Too cozy for my liking.
Must Beat Side Podcast, 11th.
They are then.
Living up to his title.
Even if you combine all of our scores, I think they're still ahead of us. Ugh. That really sucks.
So everyone's being mean to me again.
Yes, on the comments. Really, it's getting quite rude, I think. Yeah. I would be offended if I were you.
Well, Steve in the UK, he says, Side Podcast Race has got 300 points for this race, current total 850 points, which puts Christine in 111th place.
Okay, so let's just state in the facts.
Yeah.
Nice.
Christine, there are still 5 people below you who have scored points in all 3 races.
Okay.
But the bad news is that you have already been overtaken by somebody with less race results than you. Thanks for that.
Yeah, I'm presuming that person didn't pick the drivers that they like the look of.
What are you accusing me of?
Being very fickle.
Well, Stephen Roy said, my Fantasy Races team was a disaster. It was so bad, I scored the same number of points as Christine. So I said to that, you know, I'm not a benchmark for poor scoring.
Yes, you are.
Well, that's what he said. He said, Christine, I really don't want to be the one to tell you, but the rest of us have had a meeting and decided you are the benchmark for poor scoring. So apparently people are talking about me behind my back now as well.
Brilliant. That is brilliant.
And the other comment that I liked was from Lou. She said, my Fantasy Races was awful. I'm now 112th, just behind Christine. Not that that's bad.
No.
Yeah, thanks for that, Lou.
Yeah, it really is, isn't it? It's really, really bad. I suck. I'm just behind Christine.
Yeah,
that's
wonderful.
The level. So where does that leave our top 5 then?
Refusing to leave the top 5.
Hanging on in there.
It's Rubber Baby Buggy Bumpers with 1,353
Woo!
Points. In 4th place, NG Racing with 1,372. In 3rd, it's Fledglings with 1,414.
Impressive stuff.
In 2nd, JM Racing 14 with 1,422. And taking the top spot, Canuck F1 with 1,455.
Come on, Canuck F1. So are you still playing this game or are you going to throw in the towel?
I'm still going. I've made some tweaks to my lineup already.
Okay, so people aren't getting the better of you just yet.
Nope.
You have thicker skin than I give you credit for.
I keep telling you, we're sandbagging. Housekeeping. I have decided, since everyone is picking on me, that I'm not going to do a show next week.
Why is that?
Because I'm not going to.
Don't suck. That's not fair. Don't let them get the better of you. What's the real reason you're not doing the show?
Because I'm going to do 7 instead.
Yeah. Is it about time you did a mini-series?
It is.
I like those. They're really popular. What are you doing this week?
This time, it's all about F1 and how it fits into the world.
Okay.
So, environment, economy, things like that.
Sounds good. And that's starting on Sunday, is it?
Yep.
It's going to run for 7 days, and then we'll be back the following Sunday with another show.
Yeah.
I have to admit, we are struggling to fit these miniseries in because we like to do them, and they are obviously very popular, but it's a bit of a squeeze at the moment. We have a lot going on.
I've got loads of ideas for miniseries. I've got a whole list.
Yeah, and we should do more of them, but I'm not quite sure how we're going to fit them in the future. So luckily, there's a bit of a break in the Formula One calendar. If we can squeeze one in, and then maybe in the future, we'll see if we can just bump some stuff around and fit a few more in when we can.
As ever, we're after your feedback.
And the feedback is more important on the miniseries because you normally make at least one mistake.
It is a tradition that in my miniseries I make at least one factual error.
Glaring error, I would probably call it. Yeah. And it requires somebody to come along and point it out to you.
Yes.
And so it will be just as likely to happen next week.
Well, you never know. I might put one in there on purpose.
Ooh, like a bit of a test, like a Formula One test. Mm. Talking of which, 14th of April, testing in Barcelona.
Oh, I like what you did there.
We'll be back with all the news and all the new bits and all the teams just to see how they've been doing in their testing when we come back in 2 weeks' time.